One of the first things we notice about each other is appearance, eye color, hair texture, height, weight, and skin color, physical differences that are often used to distinguish one race of people from another. A new three-part documentary series that begins airing on many PBS stations this evening challenges one of the basic assumptions about race, that people can be divided into subgroups based on physical and biological differences. The series, called Race, The Power of an Illusion, argues that race, or at least the idea of physical difference, is actually a myth based on misguided science, restrictive laws, and rigid social customs. Larry Adelman is executive producer of the series, and he says skin color means very little.
The very fact that you can tell one thing about someone, such as their skin color, really tells us nothing else about them. Well, skin color really is only skin deep.
But scientists and statisticians have been trying for centuries now to find some biological difference among the races.
Yeah, isn't that a trip? Why do we have this tremendous obsession of trying to find differences between the races? It goes back to the 19th century when people would measure everything from skull size to the size of your thigh bone to, at one point, it was even thought that black people had, quote-unquote, black blood, even though our eyes, one would think, would tell us that that was obviously a myth. So why this focus on biology as opposed to society? And I think one of the things that we tried to do in our show, particularly the second episode, is looks at the way in which historically race as an idea came into play. What scientists have discovered is that racial profiling is as incorrect and inaccurate on the molecular level as it is on the New Jersey Turnpike.
You make the point time and time again in all three segments that physical differences alone don't make race, that rather it's the laws and customs that grow out of or are attached in some way to these differences that make this notion of race. There were two cases heard by the Supreme Court just a year apart in which the court used a rather elastic line of reasoning to define and determine the terms of race. Could you give us just a quick explanation of these two cases and the import?
Well, the role of the courts and the law is another example how race, far from being fixed, is something that is always changing, always determined, and again, not by biology, but by our social institutions, in this case, the law. Takeo Ozawa was a Japanese immigrant who came from Japan and had lived here for up to 20 years, having attended the University of California. And he applied for citizenship. One problem. According to the Naturalization Act of 1790, only, quote-unquote, free white persons could be citizens. So Ozawa petitioned the court and said, look at my skin. I am as light as, or not lighter, as many white people. I should be allowed to become a citizen. And he also, though, made another argument, a very important argument, that skin color or race shouldn't matter anyway. What matters, in fact, is your character.
The court ultimately denied his claim.
Well, what the court does is says that Ozawa may be white, but he's not Caucasian, and that according to science, only Caucasians can be white. That Ozawa, as a Japanese immigrant, is a member of, quote-unquote, the Mongoloid race. Now, what's so interesting about this is that 3 months later, a citizen from South India by the name of Bhagat Thind, seeing his opening, also petitions the courts for citizenship. Thind had been denied citizenship on the ground that he was not white. But he argues to the court, hey, science says that I am Caucasian. Scientists, anthropologists, classifying people from South India, from India, as Caucasians. Hence, you should allow me to become a citizen here in the United States. The U.S. Supreme Court refutes its own logic, and it says that, well, Thind may be Caucasian, but the common man can see that he's clearly not white. Thind, as well as Ozawa, was declared not white, and hence, people from India, as well as people from Japan, joined folks from China and elsewhere, who as immigrants were not allowed to become citizens of the United States.
Government policy has also created and solidified the definition of race and the laws and practices that affect opportunities and life chances. One clear example of this in your film are the ratings assigned to various neighborhoods by the Federal Housing Authority. Could you quickly tell us about those ratings and the effects that they had on the composition and the housing values in those communities?
In the 1930s, the federal government made it possible for millions of Americans to own a home for the first time. However, the government also set up a national neighborhood appraisal system, which explicitly tied mortgage eligibility to race. And our government, our federal government, ipso facto deemed that integrated communities were a financial risk and thus made ineligible for home loans, for low-cost home loans. Now, as a result of that, between 1934 and 1962, the federal government underwrote or provided mortgage insurance, making it possible for $120 billion of home loans. Now, of that $120 billion, more than 98% went to whites, mostly in the suburbs. In other words, the federal government made possible those booming post-war segregated white suburbs that sprung up across the country.
You have a very dramatic example of this disparity in your own shop with the two filmmakers who worked on this documentary. One white, one black. Both families purchased their homes within a year of each other. The results over time were very different.
Well, both Cornelius Moore and I, co-directors at California Newsreel, our parents bought homes in the 50s. My parents were able to buy a home in Merrick, Long Island with a 3% loan. After my folks moved to the suburbs in the 50s, that house of theirs appreciated in value greatly, so that when they were able to sell it in 1990 when they retired, that $20,000 home went for $300,000. However, my partner, Cornelius, his folks couldn't buy in a place like Merrick. So instead, Cornelius's parents had to buy in one of the few communities that would sell to black people. In his case, Chester, Pennsylvania. When he sold his mother's home 3 years ago after his father passed away, Cornelius got, guess what, all of $29,500 for that home. Now, Cornelius and I have made the same money, exact same salary at Newsreel for the last 20 years. Yet, my net worth is several times that of his. And it's an example how net worth or family assets is something which is passed down from generation to generation to generation. So this is a truly an important point for, I think, to understand that race may not be biological, yet is still very real and still deeply affects life chances and opportunities.
Larry Edelman, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's just a real pleasure to be here.
Larry Edelman is the executive producer for a documentary series called Race, The Power of an Illusion, which begins airing on PBS stations this evening. To test your perceptions on race, take the quiz at npr.org.